the second hour of We the People Radio. My name is Aaron Ryan.
My name is Bill Cundiff, and our sponsor this hour is Pape Machinery, our local John Deere ag and turf dealer. They've got everything you need in the way of John Deere. Go up and see them. They're located at 3119 Twin View Boulevard. They got mowers, tractors, attachments, you name it. They've got it in stock right now, ready for spring. So it's right around the corner. The grass is starting to grow. Gosh, we're sitting at about 75 degrees here in Redding today in middle of February. Yeah, it's pretty darn nice. So don't get caught short. Go up and see them and be prepared for spring. You can give them a call at 530-226-9226 or go online and check out all their products there. You can also, on that site, you can actually go to the tab. It says Build Your Own. You can outfit your own tractor and see what kind of dollars you're talking about. It's a great site. And that's papemachinery.com.
Just to be the weather girl, it's only 69 out.
Oh, it's 69?
So put your swimming suit away.
Wait, with the wind chill, it's 75. Is that how that works?
What are you, my roommate from college? With the windshield factor?
That's the windshield factor, yeah.
Yeah, the old windshield factor. I'm like, okay, that's not what that is. All right, we're going back to prison. Back to prison with Josh and Lanny. All right, guys, so I have posted your Council of Prisons local number 33, which is your western region there. It was a letter from December 17th. I mean, just the beginning. The western region facilities are in a crisis with staffing that's directly affecting the welfare of all correctional staff. That's your opening line. Fairly direct.
Right.
I'm not going to read the whole thing, obviously, but just out of curiosity, with an opener like that, did you get a response?
No, there was no response that was put out, at least not one to all staff, anyways. If you read back on there, it talks about the hiring freeze in 2021.
Yep.
It's basically asking to be able to hire staff in order to compete with the areas and attract quality applicants. And obviously nothing has changed. We've actually gotten quite a bit worse since then.
Since 2021. And I did post that on the site for today. So I forgot to say today is actually the 12th of February, 2023, just in case we replay this, because I think we will. So if somebody wants to go on there and look.
I was actually incorrect also earlier when I said the agency was about 7,000 inmates over population. We were actually closer to 25,000.
Oh, it's kind of like immigration numbers.
Right.
Immigration math.
It's kind of the thing that they're not taking into the facility's actual structural capabilities, and they're not sound facilities that we're being housed in with water running down the walls every time it rains.
Well, see,
if it has a bed and a roof, essentially you're getting an inmate in it.
Well, okay, so I think people routinely believe that when you go to federal prison, everybody's sitting around and, you know, eating bonbons in a fancy cell with a nice TV and kind of kicking back doing nothing. I don't think, here's your trash bag and your tape. Let's make sure and funnel that water away from your bed. I don't think
right.
Most people would see that.
And that's the other side of it is, you know, they're humans. We're humans. We're still just people, essentially, and they're people, and those aren't ideal conditions for anybody to be living in and stuck inside of a cell, you know, during periods of the night where you're up trying to divert water down your wall to hopefully make it into your sink drain, you know.
That's ridiculous. I'll put on my little tinfoil hat. How has lack of access due to the COVID shutdowns furthered this, because I'm guessing keeping everyone out may have made that a little easier to pull off stuff like that with nobody seeing it?
COVID was really great for the agency to claim as a reasoning for things.
Mm-hmm.
This was all existing before COVID.
Right.
COVID didn't cause any of this.
No, but easier to hide.
Right, and that's what they've used it as, exactly that, is that oh, you know, we had COVID and we were still hiring during COVID. It wasn't like we were on a freeze. It was just, they're using COVID to say like, oh, that's why our staffing's low. And it's not, we were this way before COVID.
Sure. Well, when I popped on last night to get a picture to post on the site, it still had a big red thing across the front that, you know, nobody can go in and visitors, blah, 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 COVID, blah, blah, blah. Is that still the thing?
No, they're actually having visiting.
Okay.
Yeah, that's actually incorrect.
Okay. I was curious about that because I thought, gee, how long are we going to drag this out? But, you know, other places are dragging it out, so who knows. It has to be just incredibly difficult from on the staff. It's not a great, I mean, it's not a happy job to start with. You know, it's a lot of stress, a lot of pressure, a lot of negativity. And then you're treated like crap by your own agency who doesn't seem to care if you actually get to sleep or any of those things. How's
right,
that?
That's the thing that we're all hired here on a 5-day schedule, just like any, you know, normal job is. And over the years, as it's gotten worse and they've adjusted scheduling, they've done it unilaterally. They haven't done it with the bargaining unit, which is actually a law, 5 U.S.C. 6130, actually says that they cannot put us on a compressed work schedule without negotiations with the union. And they've done that unilaterally. And like I was talking about before the break, they're going to this 412 schedule, which is stretching the officers even thinner. So you're going from having a 3-day week and a 4-day week to now every week is a 4-day week. So you're basically telling them, hey, one more day a week, I need you to come in here away from your families, away from whatever personal life things you have going on, and come in for an extra day. And we already have a hard time keeping staff. Stretching them thinner is not the answer, you know, and it's not ideal when you have staff members with children who can't coach their kids Little League, who can't coach their kids basketball, those things that normal people in normal working conditions would take for granted. I mean, those are things that we aren't able to do. We're just not, we don't have that opportunity to do those things. And it's because of the choices the agency has made and the ones that they've made along the way. And unfortunately, they're going in a step that's just pulling us thinner. And there's a process for us to fight those actions, but those processes are long, they're legal, you know, they're drawn out. And it's not, other than getting the public and staff member families and MA families to call their local representatives and maybe get some oversight of the agency to make these changes to make it so officers can compete financially, you have, I believe, over 60% of our staff, I believe, aren't even off probation as correctional officers at our facility.
Wait, say that again? What?
I believe the last time that I looked at our staffing numbers for correctional officers, it was 60% were not off of probation.
So they're that new. How long does probation last?
A year.
Wow.
And there's that huge gap. And I might just put it out there. I might be stating those numbers incorrectly. Last time I looked at them.
But it's high. I mean, that's a lot. If it's more than...
It is high.
I would say if it's more than 25%, that's kind of a crisis.
It is a crisis. We've been in a crisis for years. We have a huge gap between the senior staff who have been... The staff that have been here for over 10 years. And then there's a huge gap. There's, you know, a handful of people that have been here around 5 years, and then there's just another huge gap, and then you have all these new staff, and we are hiring staff, but we can't get anybody to stay here. So, you know, you might hire 50 staff in last year, say, but they lost like 65 staff.
Oh.
So it's, even with the hiring, you can't keep them because we can't compete economically. We can't compete with family life and home life. We can't compete with anybody.
Sure.
Actually. So it's...
They get hired there and they immediately start looking for something that, you know, like better hours, better pay, like fewer criminals. Yeah.
Right. And all the 12-hour shifts, they turn into 16-hour shifts, you know, like we were talking about. So.
Yeah, how does that even... How can you even do that on a long, you know, on an ongoing basis. Okay, so for those of us who don't work in a union, never did, maybe, again, there are a lot of misconceptions about all sorts of things. This show is really, like, fraught with misconception. So I think most people think, like, the unions run everything, and they dictate, and they're, you know, swinging the big stick, and they, you know, they're bossing everybody around. But your union is not able to get over the bar with these guys. I mean, they've got you at bay.
Right, and that's not just that's the agency as a whole.
Sure.
And it's unfortunate.
No slight against your particular union, but I just mean, like, the union concept that represents you, you would think that that would be how you could rectify this, but...
Right, and that's what I was getting at, is the union as a whole, even for the Council of Friends and Locals, is continually battling the agency, you know, nationwide, and unfortunately it is nationwide. The West Coast seems to be hit quite a bit harder than most places, and I believe we are the worst off of any of the facilities. But I guess the eye-opening point is that when we talk to other outside agencies like the Federal Labor Relations Authority, FLRA,
mm-hmm.
Even their experience with the Bureau of Prisons is that they'll say when other agencies and other unions file a charge that there was an unfair labor practice, and we bring that charge up and we say, yes, there was a violation, that most agencies will just, you know, stop the act and they'll say, hey, we're sorry, and they'll correct it. So the Bureau of Prisons is the only one that will drag it out. Doesn't matter what it is. They just go all the way. They take it and they fight it. And there is a difference between our agency and typical federal agencies, and I'm not sure what that is. I'm not sure what causes it. But outside agencies interacting with our agency even notice that, and they're very vocal about it, too.
Wow. So after having dealt with Bureau of Prisons, see, Lanny, what was it, 2001 that you started with this?
That's correct. Yeah, that's correct.
Was it like this back then?
No, it was not like this at all. It's been declining over the years to where it is. It's evolved to where we are today.
Wow. Just out of curiosity, since you have such a long history in that system, was there any kind of tipping point, or was this just a thing that was kind of mismanaged, and like all mismanagement, it just continues to slide until it hits a crisis point?
Yeah, I wouldn't even say there, like you said, there wasn't a tipping point. It's gradually it became this way.
Mm-hmm.
And, you have a lot of people that are eligible to retire soon, and no amount of money is going to make these staff members stay with the conditions that we're currently in.
Sure. I mean, we see this with police on the street. You see it with highway cops, sheriffs. You see it everywhere, law enforcement in general. I mean, they're, you know, obviously the defund the police, blah, 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 all that from the last few years has just turned out to be a terrible thing for our law enforcement folks, and I can't imagine it's helped you at all.
I would say that, you know, when I began, there was a lot of pride in this job, and there was a lot of pride within the staff.
Sure.
And when I walk and I see staff, they look like they're broken. They're tired. They're tired of working all these, the officers are tired of working all these long hours. That's the biggest difference from when I started and now. The staff are just worn down.
Oh.
That poses several, you know, when they're in a unit and they're not as cognizant as they should be because they're tired, what things could happen at that point, you know?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. When you lose the morale of everybody you're working with, it just becomes more and more dangerous, and I can just imagine looking around and seeing, you know, everybody drawn down like that.
It's like a pirate ship.
Yeah.
The beatings will continue till the morale improves.
Yeah. It's,
Yeah,
exactly.
Not exactly not exactly a winning strategy. We've got to take a really quick break. We'll come right back and pick up on the pirate ship when we return. You're listening to We the People, and you can find us at wethepeopleradio.us. That's what I think of with prison.
Yeah.
Angry eyes.
You know, speaking of that, I'm kind of curious.
The angry eyes or the prison?
The prison.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. I don't want to get off topic too much here, but I'm kind of curious. You know, you have your security inside the prison. Do they have anything that patrols, like, the outside perimeter of the prison to kind of keep people from – I mean, we worked – next door to a county yard work facility, and we watched people drive by all the time throwing stuff over the fence. It was a joke. But do you folks have like an outside perimeter patrol that kind of protects you from that?
So those are all dictated by the security levels of each institution. We have had items thrown over the fence. We've had drone drops.
Oh, no kidding.
Then, yeah, we've had multiple incidents of those, and if you look this place up on a map, we're kind of out in the middle of a desert area. There's a lot of, I believe it's BLM and Army land adjacent to us. There's an Army depot right next door. It's a real open area out here.
Right. So it's not real easy to approach and not be seen.
Well, they're public roads, so there's actually two public roads that run parallel on each side of the institution.
Oh.
Of its property. There is a little bit of a gap, but those are just things that were everywhere. They're all just set by the security level of the institution, whatever that may be. Hmm. But when you were talking about earlier, and you're asking about a tipping point, what was causing it, there is something that I think has been kind of affecting that with our agency in particular, is that when I started in 2010, when I was going through the academy training course down in Glencoe, they were very vocal, very big on, if you are willing to travel, you will get promoted. And that's something that has always plagued our institution, is that we are having executive staff, we're having wardens, associate wardens. They're all coming in here, and they can have the best intentions when they get here, but they're all gone within a year. So they're all making these changes, and they're all implementing moves. They're implementing rosters, things that they're looking at, making short-term fixes rather than long-term adjustments, you know. And it's I don't want to say that it's what's going to make it look best while I'm here so I can get out of here. But
that is it. I mean, obviously.
Essentially, it's kind of what it seems it boils down to, and it's not that they're putting the institution on a track to recover and be, you know, still functional in 10 years.
The wardens and the administration that come through here have no ownership of this institution, while you got staff that are, local people that have been here become staff members. These wardens and administrators are in and they're out. So by the time an issue that they've created is, when it comes time to get it fixed, they're already gone.
Mm. Dang. Well, you have so you have all these people that are kind of coming in, going out. You have need of personnel, but do they So I know that there are, you know, we've talked about how the numbers are being cooked and all that, but currently, if you had 50 guys, say, that wanted to apply, could they do that? Are the openings actually listed as open? Or are they saying you're fully staffed?
On USA Jobs, people go on there, usajobs.gov, they look under correctional officer. They are listed on there. It's a continuously open position.
Okay.
So it's always open. The problem is that process can take anywhere from 3 to 4 months.
Ew.
From you applying to you walking in the door. So it's who's waiting around for up to 4 months.
Yeah.
For a job that's going to pay $6 an hour less.
So that's the big difference between when I started also. I went and applied, and literally I was working within 10 days.
Oh.
So
good thinking.
That's a huge difference.
Well, you have the state facility there that Governor Nuisance keeps talking about closing. Will you get any staff from that? Or is that just totally
very
different?
Likely just be... Well, you have two different things. You have the age restriction, so you have to be under 37 to be able to apply here.
Really?
Just due to, otherwise you can't get law enforcement retirement. So it's a requirement that you have to be under 37, the way the federal law enforcement retirement works. But on top of that, starting out from there to starting here is about a $30,000 difference a year.
Cut.
So it's... Right. Just to put it in perspective, we make about $30,000 less here than they're making over there.
What the hell?
Wow.
And what kind of sketch their facility for people? Who are they guarding, and what are those folks doing? I mean, I know it's state, but
right. So the CCC, the one that was closing, I believe, was a level 3 yard. It's a medium, also. And then they have High Desert, which is right next door, which is a level 4 yard. And that's, I mean, we all have neighbors. We all know each other here in the area.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, some of those people have had to move, and those actions of government, again, have taken the fire camp away from this area, which is here
right
on the edge of the wilderness, you know.
Yeah, and you know, I'll link that program, because we did a program with one of the wardens up there about that. Learned a lot about the fire camp and how that works and the whole rehabilitative effort with that. It was pretty interesting, actually. It was a lot of stuff we didn't know. But I was kind of thinking maybe you get guys. But yeah, $30,000 pay cut to go work 16 hours a day in a system, you know, back to the trash bags and the tape.
So,
right, and then, so of course, they're right outside of town there, so their commute is, you know, 5 minutes instead of 45 minutes.
Right. So you folks don't have a fire program, is that right?
No.
Okay. So that's some training that wouldn't be available to your inmates.
Wow. So the other, I'm sure you talk to people around the country, and this sounds like it's a system-wide situation, not obviously just your facility. What are you hearing from other places, besides, you know, that might be different than this?
Just more of the same, really.
Okay.
There are some institutions back east that have more staff. They're not as stretched as thin as we are. But for the most part, everywhere's a little bit low. I don't think anywhere's quite as low as we are. One of the things you were talking about, though, is about unions in particular.
Yes.
Some of the things that make us different is we, federal employees, you can't, we have a lot of laws that affect us differently than other unions do. So we don't have the ability to strike. We can't negotiate pay and benefits. We don't have any of those negotiations and those tactics that a lot of the other unions that you're probably used to hearing about or seeing how they're dealing with things. We can't do those. We have no say what the agency or the federal government pays correctional officers. All we can do is try to reach out to congressional leaders and ask them to make change. And we're trying to bring awareness and let people understand this $30,000 difference for the exact same job is it's hard to compete with.
Yeah, it sure is.
Yeah.
And you mentioned earlier they shut down the private prisons. So there are no more private prisons in California?
It's actually nationwide. So that was one of the, I believe it was it part of the First Step Act? I believe it was either a part of or was tied in with the First Step Act, that they shut down the private prison system and the federal government took over those detainees and those inmates. And unfortunately, it's just put us over population and it's caused measures throughout the agency that's said if it has a roof and a bed, you're getting an inmate in it.
Right.
And it doesn't matter necessarily the condition of that or whether it's a gymnasium or a tent on a rec yard. If it has a roof and a bed, you're getting an inmate.
So when they shut down the private facilities, did they make any compensations as far as pay and staffing and all that to compensate for the influx?
No, there's been no change. Like I said, correctional officer pay bands are laid out on OPM, and those haven't been adjusted or changed since 1971.
Mm. God.
Wow.
I don't understand. Okay. So this makes no sense how in an age when we have so, you know, we used to send, I don't know, I guess in my lifetime, we sent a lot of people to prison. We stopped sending a lot of people to prison. We sent a lot, you know, I mean, it's fluctuated over time. But right now, the only people we're really keeping in prison are the really bad ones. And the only thing between those people and the rest of us is you guys. And you're kind of being treated as expendable. Is that kind of the long and short of it?
Yeah, exactly. That's why we are trying to, you know, make the public aware.
Yeah.
We put up some semi-controversial signs. We're trying to get an online presence. We're trying to make the public aware because essentially they're just not aware.
No, and that's the thing.
The agency obviously isn't putting anything out. The agency's not exposing these problems. It's up to us to expose them, and we're trying to get Congress. Everything's federal. So unlike the state where, you know, changes can happen quickly, we have to have legislative leaders who are going to write bills, bring the bills up for vote, and be passed into law to really make changes. And until those happen, we're kind of, you know, dead in the water, just floating down the creek.
What has happened with this, legislatively, obviously, over the years? It comes up, it just... The bills languish, they die. Is there any kind of, I mean, is there opposition or just inaction?
Mostly inaction. I've seen a few bills that have been put together. Most recently, last year, was a bill, I believe it was the short title was Pay Our Federal Correctional Officers Fairly Act. But it never made it to the floor before the new Congress came in. And what that would have done was allowed government... federal correctional officers who are within a 100-mile radius of a pay locality to be included on that pay locality. Because, like, up here, we're just covered under RUS, which is rest of the United States pay. So, like, if we were on Sacramento's locality pay, we would be it's another 11.5%.
Because
those are the kinds of things that...
Explain that. How does that work?
So in federal pay, you have the federal pay charts. You go on to OPM and look up pay. You'll see it on there. It's opm.gov. And on the pay charts, every area, so they have localities that are essentially like a cost of living allowance, like a COLA.
Okay.
For people who are familiar with military. It's so those areas, like Sacramento, cost more to live there than it does in general rural areas. But up here, everything costs the same as it does in Sacramento.
Of course it does. Yeah.
Right. So it's,
and then you get to drive more, and, you know, with the sweet price of gas, that's obviously been an incredible.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, I actually looked up the housing, the median house cost of housing in Sacramento versus Reno. Reno's medium house was $60,000 more than in Sacramento. But we're getting paid less than them.
Yeah, so yeah, you should make at least what they're making.
Should.
And have a cost of living adjustment for the price according to Reno.
Yeah, it's interesting. You know, you look at it and you think, well, okay, maybe the, you know, you're understaffed, the hours are long, this and that, but you're being really well paid. But it's kind of like, even that's not.
But you're not.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're not.
Yeah, it's like, okay.
The housing is so expensive that the newer officers coming on, they won't be able to live in this area. That's why a lot of them transfer or quit. They just don't make enough money.
Do they start, I don't know how I want to, I mean, are they folks that actually come from that area, not necessarily were, you know, kids there, but do they live there or do they move there for the job and then realize, like,
It's both. And it's almost at a point where you're getting a little bit worried that we've almost exhausted all the, you know, people that are local to the area.
Yeah.
Because we've run through so many. But it is both. We do have people that come here for the job, and they move into the area. And it's like any other job, though. You know, if you're being treated good and you're getting paid good, it's hard to leave that.
Sure.
And we've had staff that have come all the way from Hawaii to get this job, to work here. And their whole plan was to be here for a year, and they've stayed for three. You know, they stayed longer until their family didn't want to do that anymore. So it is a factor. And we do have both in those situations, but when we're just running through staff, those are kind of the incidentals that are.
Yeah, you've
not
only got
as important as, you know, to receive.
Yeah, your local population up there. I mean, you're going to go through that pretty quick. I mean, I've heard that in other industries where you run out of potential hirees in a small area or a rural area, and you end up. Rehiring folks that didn't work out the first time around. Do you guys see much of that?
I have seen people leave and reapply. I haven't seen too many reapply and stay. I've seen people come back. They've worked for a little while and then left again.
Mm-hmm.
Because even they, when they came back, it was worse than it was before. So,
well, and under the kind of hours, you know, you're in a one guy for, you know, 128 people. You've got to really count on the other people that you work with, and it would certainly be helpful if you had a really cohesive staff who, you know, had some longevity together and wasn't dog tired. I mean, all those things just add up to disaster. I don't know, kind of. I guess you guys probably go to work like every other day. You're kind of used to it, but I don't know. I feel like I need to hold my breath for you.
That's kind of the thing with us trying to bring attention to it. It's not just us and our families. It's the community.
Sure.
It's the inmates that are confined here. It's their families, you know, and their visiting is getting canceled. It's their family members that aren't getting the recreational time. It's their families that aren't getting the educational classes that they're supposed to be getting. So
that's true. They're not leaving the facility in the condition that they, you know, if in fact they wanted to be a productive citizen, they're getting shorted on that too. We have to hang on to that idea, and we'll come right back and finish that thought. You are listening to We the People, and you can find us at wethepeopleradio.us.
Nurses all gathered round, and they gazed in wide wonder at the joy they had found. The head nurse spoke up, said, "Leave this one alone." She could tell right away that I was bad to the bone, bad to the bone, bad to the bone, bad, bad, bad.
Criminal, when we catch a criminal, it's nothing we can do but play cops and robbers, cops and robbers.
All right, you guys. What have we not covered?
Well, we were talking about the effect of all this on the families and the support folks up there.
Yeah.
How all this is affecting them as well. That's something I think that isn't really taken into consideration.
Those stressors on the family, there's a reason why some staff are actually quitting.
Yeah.
You know, it's affecting their home life.
Sure.
You know, another thing, you know, I want to touch on was these officers, you know, say they're working a 16-hour day and they got an hour drive to work and from work. Day after day after day, they're on the road driving here. I think that's like it's a danger to the people that are driving on the highway, you know. It's only a matter of time.
Yeah, for one of them falls asleep at the wheel. And
right.
Yeah, no
just
kidding.
None of that is a recipe for, of all the jobs out there, I mean, there's a lot of stuff where you really have to be on your toes. But I think your job, you got to really be on your toes.
Well, you have to attempt to make it. A decent work environment. I don't care where you're at.
Yeah, I would imagine you guys, you know, do your. I would imagine you do your best, but it's amazing to me though that the management. What kind of interaction do they have with all this? Any? None?
It's hit or miss. Actually, we've had pretty good relationships with a few of them. Some of them have came in and been very dismissive. Some of them have worked with us until they found out they were leaving and then didn't want to work with us anymore.
Oh.
But that's the whole thing. None of them are invested here. None of them are planning to stay here. This is a stepping stone, you know. It's just, let me get my associate warden or let me get my warden so I can get my SES. And
senior executive service, yeah.
Yeah, and that's, you know, 125% of GS-15 pay.
Wow.
To them, that's a big deal, and the motives and the motivation to do certain things may start to get a little bit convoluted in
the focus
the way
goes away.
They can promote throughout this agency.
Well, okay, so let's do what you can't do. Let's be king for the day, right? So if you guys got to kind of rewrite it, I realize it. The list would be fairly long, but if it was yours to fix, where would you start? What would be your concrete things that you would do right out of the box?
Increase correctional officer pay to be compatible with the economy.
Okay. Seems like not really a big lift, but I get that it is.
It is just because it's, you know, federal and has to go through Congress.
Right. So
well, I would think that increasing the staff just to make your job safer would be pretty high on the list too, wouldn't it?
Right, but that's the double-edged sword is how do you get 50 correctional officers in here?
Yep.
You know, on one day. You can't do that unless you can retain them in the economy.
Right. Back to that again. It really does all start with the pay.
It does, yeah, and it's unfortunately, if you start talking about pay and everybody gets all, you know, like, oh, you just want more money, like, well, you know, look at the situation we're in.
Yeah, no kidding. Well, and I think maybe, Josh, you had told me before, if you work at, I don't know, are you telling me, like, Home Depot or something in Reno? Like, the pay compared to where you guys are? You had given me some example a while back, and I thought, what the heck?
So in Reno, Reno's a very booming economy over there. They're still growing. They're building houses everywhere. They have a lot of the tech companies that are coming out there. A lot of the, U-Line is over there. They're a real big one. A lot of warehouses over there. They are all paying more than what we are paying. And there's no drive. There's no commute. They have retirements the same as we do. You know, they're paying benefits. They're paying them sign-on bonuses. Like, how do we compete with that? You know, and unfortunately, is the congressional leadership isn't aware of these things, and it's hard to break it down for them because they have no understanding of how the prison system works. They have no understanding of what we're dealing with. And those are the things that hopefully we can get out there to people. If you have family members in prison as inmates, contact your local representatives, ask them, get a little bit of oversight, ask them to get involved in the prison system.
And that's pretty much true with any industry. If your top level management is not tuned in with what the local economy is doing and what local pay is doing, you're going to lose people. I mean, it's just that simple. People go to work for a paycheck, and it's
right.
Nice if you can incorporate the fact they like what they do. But bottom line is, they're there to make money and provide for their family, and
better hours, closer to home, more money, all that.
Yeah, I mean, I had an employee come to me one time and said, "Hey, I can make more money at McDonald's than here." And you start looking around, and it's like, yeah, you can. We need to fix that. And if you don't, you're going to constantly, you know, it's going to be a revolving door, just like what you're talking about. You're going to end up bringing people in. You know, they're going to realize it's not a great work environment, and the pay isn't all that great. I mean, what's the upside? So you start losing folks, and so, you know, that is an important part of the equation is compensation.
Yeah,
right. And that's the new director that was appointed last year when. She first came in to the director's seat. She was talking about fixing and staff exhaustion. Those were the biggest issues to her and that she had heard. And one of her very first acts was to hire 40 additional investigative staff. It's like she's talking about staff exhaustion, but she's first act was to hire investigative staff. And if you have quality staff and you have staffing at the proper rate, you don't have staffing problems, you know, because you have good staff to keep the questionable ones in line, you know, and
what does
sort out them.
What does investigative staff do? What does that mean? Like, what is that job?
The people that are processing staff investigations, like if an inmate makes an accusation that a staff member violated, you know,
oh, investigating you guys, not the prisoners?
Correct.
Wow.
Okay. Wow, I thought I was missing something there. Okay, no. Huh.
And that's the thing is that we've had staff members who unfortunately were given cases for things that are, I mean, not even controversial. They're just petty to begin with. We've had one that had a case put on him for smiling while he was on the special housing unit range, you know, where inmates are locked down. And he smiled at an inmate, and they may file them, and they opened up an investigation case on them.
So I've seen staff members take cases for actually following policy.
How do you even defend yourself on a deal like that? Is it just a paper pain in the ass goes in your file, or is it a problem?
Most of it's just a process, and it's just a nuisance for the staff member, but it's. Those are things that they contact their union representative. We have to go in while they're giving testimonies and statements, and it's
more time wasted.
It's just a waste of time, and it's
smiling.
But devoting staff members, and they drag them out for years and years too. So it's not like it's a week long and it's done. We have ones, and we've actually had memorandums from previous directors that said, "Hey, these have to be done within 180 days." And it'll take them, you know, 3-4 years. Staff members still have cases on them for stuff that's ridiculous from 4 years ago. And you have that hanging over your head as a staff member.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, the broken cookie case, I remember, went on forever. We actually really thought they were kidding. They super weren't kidding. That was a thing. I guess after that, I was like, I guess I believe anything.
Yeah, hiring internal affairs, basically, personnel.
40 of them?
Yeah, that really doesn't solve anything, as far as the ongoing issue.
Well, that basically just told you guys you were super expendable and that the food chain was opposite of what you thought.
Right, and that's exactly what the message was to staff, and unfortunately, the way that it was presented initially when the director was appointed was that they were pro-staff, and they were going to work on staff exhaustion and the staffing numbers and these things. And just the agency in general, the things that they spend money on that they could be using to ask Congress for money to be able to use those funds for staffing, you know, to increase retentions or to increase hiring incentives. And they spent millions of dollars over the last 3 years paying a third-party company to do a national bed book audit, which is walk out and count how many beds you have in your housing units, you know.
Like,
why are we paying a company to do that? I just told you there's 128 beds in every housing unit. We have 12 housing units.
Do the math.
End of investigation.
Get a pencil.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's, again, that's just typical bureaucracy that, you know, I think
you're always going to have that.
To justify their job.
Man.
That's crazy.
That is super crazy. Okay, so what's something nobody would guess? Like, something that you guys see all the time that people would be like, what? That goes on there? Nothing, you know, personal or weird or anything, but like, what are things people don't consider? Pretty much everything.
pretty much things you can't mention.
Sorry, I can hear your head smoking over there.
I mean, there's things that happen every day that you're just at a loss for, you know. And there's, I mean, that's both with the population that we house, and it's with staff, and it's with management. There's things every day that make you go, huh?
How long are these people there? Like, when you're in a, I obviously it's all sentencing and whatnot, but I mean, have you seen some of these people for, you know, a decade, or are they in and out, or?
Oh yeah. Yeah. We have, inmates that are serving life sentences. We have inmates that are here for a month.
Right.
Everything in between.
Oh.
There's a, yeah, it's literally everything in between. I was talking about with the management variables and,
yeah,
the security system, or the security levels, everything kind of gets pushed around. It's all a numbers game.
Yeah. I would imagine the lifers are the ones you got to watch out for, because they really have nothing to lose, or they're going to be there anyway. So I would imagine their attitude, although maybe they look at it like, I'm going to be here forever, I might as well learn to get along. Is that the case?
I would say both, actually. Some of them, you know, they're... You got to figure, if you're here for a long time, you want a mellow time, right? So
yeah,
you're going to kind of keep the young guys in line. And unfortunately, the issues that we have with staffing, and you got to close recreation, and you got to close these educational programs, closing all these things, puts them into the housing unit more, and it puts them in their cells more. Which,
right.
Everybody's in closer contact, more pressure.
Oh, yeah. Lets them sit and stew and just...
cook up stuff.
Yeah. Think.
Right. So it's, staffing is like a multifaceted issue that affects not just us. It affects the inmates. It affects our families. It affects the inmate families.
Oh, yeah.
It affects everybody, the community around us. And
well, that's the linchpin of the whole thing, because you guys, I mean, it's you know, you're the lock on the door. So... you know, if that's not in good shape, everything is kind of up for grabs.
Right.
Man. Well, just as taxpayers, we're sorry you're doing this. We're sorry you have to deal with this, because that is crazy.
Well, on top of everything you need to, I mean, just your day-to-day duties with your job, it's not an easy job to start with.
No.
But then when you have to deal with, you know, the bureaucracy kind of keeping their thumb on everything and just making your job even tougher, I mean, it's so unnecessary.
Yeah.
I mean, just with a few changes, I mean, it would
yeah.
just make life
wouldn't,
so
wouldn't
much
take
easier.
A genius to make a change there. Fellas, thank you for your military service, for starters. Thank you for keeping us safe from all the people that you deal with every day. And we hope people will send this show out. It'll be commercial-free this afternoon. You'll be able to send the link out and inform your friends and family and other people, because it's about time we got smart about this. Thanks a lot. Have a great day.
And yeah, thanks for coming on.
I am sure we will talk to you soon. You've been listening to We the People, and you can find us at WeThePeopleRadio.com.
For good.